Oh, here we go again, folks. Another Friday Live right here on the Walt Weekly Podcast. I am your host, Walter Latham, and I'm joined by your co-host, Michelle Sweeney McCombs. And on this week's show, we were in a production meeting, and we discussed this, and we decided that it would be, we would be remiss if we did not discuss the ongoing police violence against Black and Brown people in this country. And I would just like to know, it's just a question that I have, why is it you don't hear these types of incidents when police interact with white folks? All right, so today's show, the name is America, A Reckoning with Race. Okay, and I'm going to try to tee it up before we move on to the panel and to my co-host, Michelle. You know, the recent shooting of Dante Wright and the brutal pepper spraying of an Army officer who was in fatigues, in uniform, and the attempt to cover it up. If you watch the, I saw a clip, you know, of subsequent conversation between the cop and this military guy, the lieutenant. Right. And it represents that sending officers for training is not the answer. The cop that shot Dante had been on the force for more than 20 years. Mm-hmm. In addition, she was an instructor. So with the host of shootings and brutality, it is clear that problem is escalating. The problem is escalating, folks, instead of declining. Therefore, I believe there is only one solution, and that is police across the country must go through a purge. And what do I mean by that? That it should be similar to a stand down, and it should be a process in place to vet and get rid of the racists and white supremacists and cowards who are afraid of people that are not their color, who permeate the police force throughout the country. Replace them with new recruits. There are a lot of people out there looking for jobs and want to do a good thing for their country. So if it takes extreme measures to address this issue, so be it. But even if there's only one in five that are bad, then this problem will continue. We're going to be discussing this issue again. Now, that's the Walt Weekly solution. And I mean, that doesn't cover the panel because they're independent thinkers. They're thought leaders. All right, but this is the Walt Weekly's position that we should have a purge. That's the only thing I believe will work. Now, let me turn it over to Michelle so we get the show started. Thank you.
Hey, thank you, Walter. Welcome, everyone, to the Walt Weekly Friday Live. Today's show is sponsored by Beauty Blends by Army Soap and Love and Michelle Sweeney Hair. Our intro and outro music is provided by Uncle Nephew. Today's weekly panel, returning panel, is Greg Coleman out of North Carolina, COO of Illumination Media and Technology and Engineer at the Walt Weekly. Our next panel is Ernest J. Robinson out of Washington, D.C., Sergeant, U.S. Marine Corps, Combat Veteran, Senior Consultant at B. Ernest Leadership and Professional Consultant. Our next panel is Gene Anthony Edwards. He's Male District Leader, 79th District in the Bronx, New York. We will have another panel joining shortly. I will post everyone's social media and website in the chat room, and I will also interact with the audience in the chat room. If you have any questions or comments you'd like to make, please type it in the chat room and we will try to address it. Back to you, Walter.
Yeah, thanks, Michelle. And thank the panel. It seems like, you know, the police violence against Blacks is escalating, as I indicated earlier. I'd like to know your guys' thoughts on this. Do you think it's escalating? Is it tampering down? But what are your thoughts? Let me start with Ernest. Ernest, what do you think about it?
Well, I mean, I think that it's evident that it's increasing. However, I also believe that there, because of technology, because of social media, I think it allows for us to be in a space where we're able to see it readily. Take, for example, the lieutenant who was pepper sprayed. He very much, because of his awareness of what the social climate is like, drove for at least a mile, maybe two, in order to being able to get to a well-lit area, in order to being able to have a chance at being able to have the correct story told about what he's doing. So if you think about times where we did not have cameras on our phones, with high definition and everything else, we didn't have as many cameras in the buildings and surveillance cameras are in areas. How many African American or Black and Brown people have been, assaulted, taken advantage of, charged and convicted unjustly? And so I think that there's two parts to it. I think it's becoming more prevalent and it's happening more. But I also think because of social media and because of the advances in technologies, we're able to capture it and share that as well.
Yeah, and I think for that particular young man, he was also afraid. He was, feared for his life in a secluded area. That's why he also drove that far where it was well lit. So.
Yeah. He did the right thing.
He did the right thing.
But the cops, I mean, if y'all guys saw the video of the subsequent conversations
that
they had after, where the cop is trying to, get his arms around it because he knew damn well he was wrong. All right. And he got scared then. So he's looking at the repercussions, telling the guy, if you didn't drive, if you stopped when we first, put the lights on you, maybe we wouldn't have gone this far. Blah, blah, blah. So you right there, you're looking at what I would, can you call it racist? You're looking at a daggone dirty cop. That's what you're looking at.
Yeah, and he was upset that he made him drive, follow him. They had to follow him a mile behind him with the flashing lights. So, he was already pissed that he didn't stop, so.
I mean, the thing about it, I mean, that is one, I believe is just an excuse.
Yes.
In many cases, when you're on certain areas of the highway or certain roadways, it is feasible and actually a courtesy to be able to drive to areas where it is both safe for you as well as for the officer.
Right.
I.e., if you get pulled over in the middle of a highway, you don't stop right there in the middle of the highway. You go all the way over to a meeting or into where one is available. So that way it is a safe stop.
Right.
So it was just really just an excuse. And even for those to try to use that as an excuse, not just the officer, but just for, everyday people who are trying to defend the police officer saying, oh, yeah, he should have just stopped immediately. No, not necessarily. No.
Right. But yeah, even on a local street, if I get pulled over, I don't stop where I'm at. Like, I'll wait until there's a space for me to really pull over at that I feel is comfortable for both parties, myself and the cop. I'm not going to stop in the middle of the street. So, Gene.
You're waiting for Gene to come on? He's probably on.
Yeah, there. I'm here. I can't recall a case specifically because I've been that far removed from my days of active duty service, but I'm sure I've probably been pulled over because I used to have a lead foot, when I was younger. And when I would get pulled over, as soon as, the officer would approach and see me in uniform, like the whole conversation changed. Like it went from me being, a breaker of vehicle and traffic law to, me being a service member, like right then it just de-escalates on its own. And, and here's something that no one's talked about. And, sadly, I'm not fluent in Spanish, so I can't listen to Telemundo or any other the Spanish news channels. But The officer's surname was Gutierrez, and I know he saw Nazario on the name tag of the uniform, and it got me to thinking about the whole, you know, light skin, dark skin dichotomy of black people going back to shadow slavery and the light skin, dark skin dichotomy that exists within the Latino, you know, culture that doesn't really get talked about widely. So, you know, there's a lot to unpack there. Thank you.
I think one of the things that trumped that in this case, for lack of a better phrase, is that blue mentality takes over. You know, he might have saw and recognized his name as being somebody else of Hispanic descent. But what's running through his brain now is the fact that I'm blue and you're not. Because you can only, I mean, just his terminology. And, you know, a guy says, well, I'm scared or this, that, and the other. Well, you're about to ride the lightning, buddy. I mean, come on with the cowboy stuff. You know, and that's the problem, Walt. Yeah. I think that's the bigger problem, that cowboy mentality in police, period. And when you got that cowboy mentality, you know, everybody, almost everybody is the enemy. And, you know, if you're not us, you're the enemy. And that's a problem. And if you got that inferiority complex and you take that into the police department, you know, there are ways to sift through that. And the impetus is on police departments all over this country to eliminate that element from their ranks, and nothing less is going to be acceptable. Because I mean, you look at the fact that one of the most, everybody's eye is on that trial in Minnesota, and then cops in Minnesota go through the same thing. Like, they're not even aware of the fact that I am under the microscope, and they shoot, you know, another young man like that. They're not conscious. They live in another world. They live on another planet and speak another language. It's blue or nothing to them. And you got to get rid of that okie doke, okay corral, you know, I'm coming out with two guns blazing mentality.
So that reminds me, I'm sure everybody's seen the movie Mississippi Burning.
Definitely.
And, yes. And when they, with the two white Jewish guys and the one black guy. And one of the sayings that they had is that you left me, I shot me an N word, but at least, you left me an N word to shoot, but at least I shot me one. Mm-hmm. Right. It was a badge of honor for them to being able to do something like that. Now, granted, we're talking about, you know, the 1920s, 1930s.
Right.
But the thing is that Gutierrez, that was his opportunity to get his badge of honor, to being able to rough up, to shoot, to antagonize, to you know, torment another black person. And to Greg's point, he doesn't see himself as being a minority, you know, again, because he's wearing a different uniform. His hue is much lighter. You know, he may not even, you know, the fact that he just couldn't figure out a way to change his name fast enough from Navarro to anything else. Right. And so that's always been there. So I think it's not so much of being able to really get at the core of law enforcement, because law enforcement came out of slave patrols. And so that there's a long systemic issue with race that has to deal with the country more so than with the institution itself. There is a culture within the institution that we have to address. Absolutely. But until we don't have racist individuals who want to utilize and to abuse the institution itself, i.e. the military or law enforcement or fire department or EMT. We got EMTs that sit there and make decisions based upon whether or not you black. Oh, you come from this. Oh, you might not make it to the hospital.
Right, right.
You know, and that happens. But so we got to take it out. Which is a great title. Chris did a great job coming up with this title, and Walt stamped it. But this is what the reckoning really is.
Yeah,
is because these issues are long rooted in the core of the United States of America.
This country, that's right. Until they change the laws, nothing is going to change as far as racism is concerned. They have to accept that the fact that there is an issue here.
But you know what, Shell? So, I kind of question that even. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because that makes sense if they change the law. But I don't care what they change the law to, because when you have a certain mindset, if you don't even see them as human, it doesn't matter. I mean, look how many times. Look at the books and see how many different laws address it, and nothing does anything about it. Nothing does anything about it at all.
Well, the laws are not fit for us. The laws are fit for them.
No, but even so, they're going to twist and change the laws accordingly.
Right.
You got to deal with the institution. With the institution. They got to dismantle that institution, that psychological evaluations, the background evaluations, the hiring, the firing, you really got to take a look at these cities that are absolutely terrified of these unions. They won't step up to these unions because they're afraid of what, you know, going on strike and this, that, and the other, and them bad mouthing me at the next election. But look, right is right, wrong is wrong. And until we're willing to come up on the side of right and not, I don't know, turn the other cheek when it's wrong because it might not serve your long-term best interest, then we're going to have a problem no matter what the law is.
Right, right. So, okay, well, I just wanted to say something. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the one thing about law is that we always utilize precedent. Michelle, I mean, you're right about changing certain laws, but the thing about it is the laws have already existed. We have the 13th Amendment that's been in existence. We've had the 14th Amendment. We're all the way up to the 26th Amendment. We have the Free Housing Act. We got Civil Rights Act. We have Voting Rights Act. So all these laws exist. Manslaughter exists. So all the laws already exist. What the issue is the accountability piece.
Right. Right.
And how it's so easy to dismiss. And instead of the law being blind, the law becomes subjective. And that is not the way that the interpretation of either the Constitution, state codes, or laws, ordinances, they're not supposed to be subjective. They're supposed to be objective. That if you go over the speed limit, you have broken the speed limit, and therefore you're subjected to this penalty.
Right.
And this penalty carries a statute, not for someone to then have the discernment to then, arbitrarily, saying without any founding to just dismiss it. And that's where I say that to say because, right, the precedent has been set from back to Emmett Till, back to, back into, to slavery, a number of different things have happened over the course of time that the precedent has been set. And so therefore they're following something that's already, that part has to change in order, moving forward, that judges need to be held accountable.
Right.
Prosecutors, district attorneys need to be held accountable. If you are woefully negligent, and derelict in your duties to being able to uphold the law, then those individuals need to be held accountable. So individuals like a Gene, like anybody that serves on city council, anybody that serves in the state assembly, needs to have that pressure put onto those elected officials, as well as the constituents that voted for them, to sit there and say, no, you were derelict in your duties and being able to uphold justice for said act. And we're going to hold you accountable now and complicit to whatever you allowed to take place.
Right.
Okay. Now, this is my thought process on this is that you have your laws and all this kind of stuff, but you have to look at the people who are supposedly to enforce the law. So if you have people take for instance white people, okay, that have been born into racism, that sees blacks through the prism of inferiority. Already they think they know. I mean, they are, it's ingrained in them. There's no way you're going to take it back. You can send them to training. You can send them to re-education camps. You can do anything. You know what I mean? They are, it's ingrained in their very being that black people or people of color are inferior. And when they pull over a white person, they looking to help that white person. They're looking to protect that white person.
Right.
When they pull over a black person, they're looking to prosecute or protect the white person from the black person. Well, this black person, he can't be good because they're looking through that prism of racism. And it was born. I mean, really, I can say they can't help it. But they were born into it. And it goes back generations.
Yeah.
Now, how do you correct a situation like that with sending them to training, re-education? No, you can't. You got to get rid of these people because it's rooted. It's an evil.
Yeah, that's incredible because They're looking at us that we hear you, Chris.
Hey, Chris.
They're looking at us as if we're criminals, we're the threat. But history has proven, history, slavery, the things the white man has done to the black man, the black people, period. You know, slavery, lynching, you know, killing, shooting, killing our leaders. I mean, they have a history of violence, you know, and they're afraid of us.
Yeah, Chris.
How y'all doing?
Yeah, welcome. Welcome, man.
I just want to piggyback what you said, because we talk about training, we talk about laws, we talk about all of these things. None of those things are flawed. The training is not flawed. The laws are not flawed. It's the people that are applying these things. They're flawed. And as long as you have a flawed group of people in charge of a system, it's never going to change. You know, the United States needs to do what Germany did years ago. Eliminate everything that was related to Hitler from the history books. There's no, there are no statues, there's nothing. And as long as you continue to teach the history of the slave master that he was a good person.
Yeah.
Well, a matter of fact, there's also, I'm gonna play devil's advocate just a little bit, because we talk about how white people grew up in this, you know, with the, obviously the system on their side, and they're using it to their advantage. And they don't protect, they protect one another. Well, more times than not, in our own neighborhoods, we do the same thing. If someone gets shot, we don't say who shot them. Someone gets robbed, we don't say who got robbed, who got beat up, who got jumped. Right. But think about it. So it's so twisted in a sense that we're talking about how much we matter, but we don't really show it. So it's
too. Yeah. Right.
We're not setting the example.
Why should we? I'm going to play devil's advocate. Why should we set an example? You're talking oranges and apples. Apples and oranges. Okay?
How?
I mean, this problem with the policing and the structural racism that exists in this country did not originate with us. We are the victims of what's been going on in this country for the last 400 years.
Oh, absolutely. No, no.
All right? If we have shootings in our neighborhood and this and that, okay, yeah, we'll clean it up. I mean, hopefully we will. All right? But you can't throw that in there and say, okay, yeah, you're shooting yourself, so therefore we should shoot you and you shouldn't complain. I mean,
I don't think you meant it that way.
Yeah. I wasn't even saying it that way at all. What I'm saying is that we have to hold the same level of accountability within our communities. We have to sit there and and really and truly value our lives. I'll give a brief example. There was a meme that was on Facebook, and it said it was a gentleman who was dating a young lady who was in church, and they dated for 3 years. They broke up, and he was dating somebody else and came to church with his new lady. Went into they went they was going they were leaving going to the parking lot. The ex girlfriend came up with a stun gun, stunned him, and knocked the man out. There's a whole bunch of people sitting there, but there was a whole bunch of people sitting there saying that that was okay, you know. And the congregation didn't say anything. There was a brother who commented and said that, well, I understand, well, you shouldn't be, you know, you shouldn't be doing dirt and rubbing salt in the wound and everything, but everyone did everything to coddle and to pacify the actions of an assault on a man, right, on a black man. Because we don't have that. It don't register that way. We sit there and we put the blame on him for those particular actions. So in sense, when we do things like have a black phone and we pull it out too fast, and then the blame goes on to the black man for, well, you shouldn't have had, well, you shouldn't have moved that quick. You shouldn't have did that. You shouldn't. Right. We do the same things. And that part, we have to figure out how do we address that as well. Yes, we have to walk and chew gum at the same time, because yes, a lot of these things have been twisted and perverted that over decades and years of time of putting those images in our minds where we're distrustful of one another. That goes back to the Willie Lynch letter. You know, we make them perpetually distrustful of one another. I don't have to control you anymore. I ain't got to whip you no more. You're going to tell them on the other person, or you're going to do this, or you're going to hururt and rob each other. I don't have to do it to you no more.
Right.
And it just gets pervasively worse when it's law enforcement and we have our justice system is in a position of failure, or I mean the perception of failure because of the way that it's being carried out. But there's a lot of actions that takes place in between that time.
I agree with you. I think we're talking the same thing, but we're coming at it from two different angles.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Right. That's right. Let me read what Chris is writing. He said, until we hold the accountable, it won't change. He also stated that we are asking a broken group of people to self-correct a system they didn't create. White people commit crimes and aren't asked to fix other white people. Black people are constantly under attack in this country. That's Chris' statement. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Chris. Thank you.
And,
You know, it's to me, I think that the violence in black neighborhoods, all right, like there were with the Italians when they came, they were shooting each other and everything to get ahead and, you know, organized crime, all that kind of stuff. A lot of the violence in the black neighborhoods can be tracked back to drug selling, drug, you know, that type of thing. Okay. But I believe that the shootings are symptomatic of the system that's in place.
Yeah, I can also say lynching. That. Legalized lynching. That's how I feel about it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, when we go out and you see kids shooting other kids and this and that, hey,
well, it's a symptom. You know, in reference to the police, you know, that's legalized lynching when they kill us.
Well, they've been killing us. They've been killing us.
They just have a right to do it now, even before they did. And now it's just, nothing has changed. It's just legal for them to do it.
All right. Well, let's track back to, you know, I don't want to go too far off, but I mean, everything is relevant. All right. Everything that's been said is relevant to the show. All right. So we're not off topic, but I do want to talk about the killing of Dante in Minneapolis.
Yes.
All right. Because that was an arrow right through my heart. I mean, he was a child. 20 years old to me is a child. Mm-hmm. And he's skinny. You know, he's like one of the slim little guys. You know what I mean? That got to fill out. I mean, so how can you got 2, 3, 4 cops standing around the guy? The guy, he panicked, which he shouldn't have done. Number one, he shouldn't have done that. Yeah, I mean,
well, you don't know how that feeling is. So anyone would panic in that situation.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't put myself in
that. In a situation like that, you can't. I don't know how anyone would react to something like that.
Yeah, if you got that.
Shit, I panic when I get pulled over. You know, but my
heart
takes over, and I'm like, "What the hell you pull me over for?"
Well, you can talk like that. I would not talk like that. I would say, hello, officer. How are you today, officer? and I'll get try to get my ass out of there.
Nope,
but I'm not going to be talking. Nah, I'm not going to do it because, you know, don't forget, I'm a black male. All right. I'm not saying that they discriminate against, you know, black males versus black women. I'm not saying that.
Right.
But what I am saying is, first thing I'm going to, and I taught my son, is, hello, officer, you know, give him all due respect and the best you can, you know, and kiss an ass if you have to get your ass out of that situation.
And that's the problem.
What problem?
Right, and I think
white people don't have to teach their children that.
Well, we know that. We know that already.
Said the wrong shit just now.
But we're in the midst of the fog. We're in the midst of the storm. What are we going to do?
Yeah, but Walt, I think what the difference is that one, having those conversations in a period of time that you came up, right? And so whatever those conversations were like for you, right? And the experience that you have today and how you would respond if you were pulled over versus a young man who may have been driving maybe 3-4 years tops, possibly, as far as, you know, on his own. But we also have to look at the level of post-traumatic stress that may have been set in, that may trigger many of us in different ways, and how we actually will respond to it. We have been inundated with images and audio and talk and gossip and everything else about all these different things that have happened every single day. And to think that you're going to be the next one and to be faced with, confronted with death. I've traveled to, you know, combat. No one knows what they're going to do when rounds start going down range, or you're you're amongst chaos and confusion. And how are you going to be able to keep your head about you during that particular time? That young man, yes, made a mistake in the sense of not knowing what to do and not necessarily making the right reaction, but the wrong reaction should not have elicited that type of response from trained professional.
Yeah, and he was a little guy. He was a small little guy, skinny little boy.
No threat. No threat at
all.
Yeah,
that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, I agree with that.
Are you talking to a police officer that's been on the force for 26 years? She did not know the difference between her taser and her gun.
That's
one
a
is
lie.
Heavier than the
that's
other.
A lie there. That's a lie. That's an out and out lie.
That's a goddamn
that's a
lie.
That's a lie.
Okay.
Yeah, that's
so
a lie. That's not.
That was bullshit.
But here's the thing though. It to me, it matters not. And this is the reason why I say that. And I always go back to when we had the conversation about guns last year. There's the escalation of force continuum. And the first part of force is actually merely presence. Then you raise you can use your words, you can escalate your voice, you can use your hands, you can use a baton, you can use deadly force is a last resort when there is imminent, and imminent threat means like right there in front of you, mm-hmm. imminent threat of death or serious bodily harm to either the officer themselves or somebody else. And so therefore, drawing a weapon of a gun is not even called for. And what I don't like, right, what bothers me is that does not get articulated well enough in court to where to right. even sit there and say that there is absolutely no reason for you to justify it because there was not a threat to your life. Yes, you can be scared, because if I'm gonna punch you in the face, you can be scared I'm gonna punch you. You can be scared that you know, whatever it can be, but your life is not being imminently threatened. And that is what the escalation of force continuum says. That's what it's supposed to do. And that's how I would believe is how it should be defended when in court.
Well, I agree.
I'm going to say, you are right, but I'm going to correct you on that. There is a threat, black man threat. That's what the threat is.
I mean, you're right.
Because if it was a white person, you know, look at all of these domestic terrorists. Not one of them was shot dead.
One lady.
I'm gonna give you another example.
Okay, exception out of how many other ones that get to walk away in handcuffs, get fed or a drink of water. They walk away with their lives because white people are not considered a threat.
That's what I'm saying. They're protecting themselves. They see their job is to protect white people. That's the way I look at it.
There's a video going around now where the cop was dragged by the guy. The guy took his SUV or pickup truck, backed it up into the other. One of the cops on the left side of the vehicle, right side of the vehicle, had his rifle drawn.
No, another one. He drove off with the cop holding on.
Yeah, that with the cop holding on to the video.
Right.
There were four cops on the scene. None of them were felt threatened enough.
Exactly.
And that dude left. There's another one on there where the guy told the cop, I'm going, if you don't leave me alone, I'm going to shoot you.
Yeah.
I'm going to shoot you. And then he ended up driving off. They didn't apprehend him. I don't know if they apprehended him later.
See, so what do you mean
that narrative that I felt my life was threatened? Like you said, the threat assessment is different. When it's,
that's what I'm saying. I mean, they look to protect, as far as the cops are concerned, they look to protect their own. They're not looking to protect us. Okay.
Yeah, but part of their threat assessment is whether he's black or white.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, just like I saw this clip, the guy, a black man was walking through a white neighborhood.
Yep.
So this sergeant is a white guy. He lives
active duty soldier.
Walked up, active duty. Mm-hmm. Walks up to the guy and said, what are you doing walking around here? I mean, people walk by my house all the time exercising.
Oh, yeah.
You don't ask them, what are you doing here? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
He's like, I live here.
I mean,
well, where at?
And then he actually pushed the guy, blocked him. I mean, it was something hard to watch, my friend.
Yeah.
Hard to watch.
It's upsetting. Not as it's upsetting.
It could have been worse than what, you know, the young man could be dead at this moment.
Yeah.
You know, it could have went left. But who the hell is he to do that? This young man was just walking in the neighborhood.
That's right.
Walking.
It's the privilege, though. That's the privilege. The man. Not one would say privilege because I think that word's misused too. But that's the audacity that they can have, or that he showed, to being able to walk up to somebody and ask, "Well, who are you?" or whatever the case may be. I mean, imagine walking down. I mean, again, most of y'all in the city, and we all used to live in the city. But imagine walking down the street and you just walking up to somebody randomly that's walking down, like asking, "Oh, who are you? And why? And what you doing here?" Like,
but can we do that to them in our neighborhood? Can we do that to them in our neighborhood?
Oh, absolutely not. Oh, that's
straight harassment. We don't say anything, right? Exactly.
Right.
Well, I tell you, I do. I can give you a story right now. I was sitting here in my office. I can look out at my front yard and where the curb is. There's no sidewalks out here. It's just a curb. You know, it's in the street.
Right.
It's suburban. But anyway, this lady, this white lady walking her dog. I hate to refer to it as white, but to keep it within context. Mm-hmm. This white lady is walking her dog. And I noticed that she stopped the dog and the dog made pee-pee on my grass. I pay a lot of money to maintain my lawn. All right?
Right.
Okay? So I ran downstairs and I went out to her. I said, look, your dog, do not allow your dog to pee on my grass. I pay a lot of money to maintain my grass. I told her point blank. She's white, blonde lady. I don't give a damn. All right?
Right.
This is my property. Okay?
But that's a key word, though. It was your property.
That's right.
That gentleman had no reason to harass the black man at all, because it was a sidewalk. It's a public area. It wasn't, I don't even think, whether it was a gated community or not, one, he had already gained access. So once you're inside of a particular area, you have all the rights and privileges thereto pertaining as everyone else, and he was not violating anyone's grass or anything else. And as a matter of fact, even if he did, it wasn't that gentleman's, and whatever was done had already de-escalated because he was minding his own business at whatever may have happened. Because everyone always like to say, well, what happened before the video was okay, whatever. At the end of the day,
there was something before that. It was a woman harassing him.
Well,
outside the camera. Woman. I think it was his wife or a neighbor or something.
Yeah, it was his wife.
It was another neighbor.
Yeah,
and then the wife was recording. His wife was talking.
His wife was recording.
Right, she was talking smack. But there was another woman that had confronted him prior to the man. So I guess he came as a man and like, I'm going to save the day for these women, for my, you know, my area, my whiteness. And he confronted him too, because the young man does say in that video that another woman had approached him as well.
Yeah, well, now that's going to be probably the end of his career.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it better be.
Exactly. No, definitively, that post commander already came out and he put the edict in. Y'all better take care of this.
Right.
So,
It's a done deal.
Y'all better take care of this. And, you know, the post commander just happens to be a brother. And he said, I grew up in the South, in South Carolina. I know what racism looks like. Y'all better take care of this.
As a matter of fact, and to put a final point on it, that that is actually something that's happening throughout the military as well. That a lot of these extremist groups or individuals who participate in extremist groups that have infiltrated the military, and regardless of where they are in their career, rank wise, where they stationed at, who they belong to, whatever, everyone is actually, and again, the fabulous title that, you know, Chris Kent, a reckoning, because even the military is coming to a reckoning with extremists and racism within the ranks of the military. They have shut down, each branch of service have shut down at minimum, at least an entire day. And when I mean shut down, I mean absolutely everything. There was no recruit training, no nothing was being shipped, nothing was being flown, everything shut down, and they did a complete stand down on extremism. Not all on the same day, but each of them have done that to being able to address this very issue right here. And I think Greg had brought it up about purging, that law enforcement should probably do the same thing. Each municipality, from the counties to the cities, from a sheriff's department to the police department to corrections officer, complete shutdown and address the extremism that is within there. And then I would spread that to the Department of Justice and all the way down from the Supreme Court, all the way down to the lowest level court, to being able to do the same thing within there, to being able to kind of rectify this, because As Walt say, all of this is relevant. How things happening within the streets, whether it's in our communities, the police interaction that they have with black and brown individuals, and then the justice system in which how everything is enforced. And that's everyone from the police officers making the arrest down to the corrections officers at the jails, up into the district counselors or district attorneys and prosecutors. Or Commonwealth attorneys, if for those who live in the Commonwealth like myself, and to the judges that impugn give the dispositions on those alleged charges. And so that's a tall order, but it can be done, and I think it should be done.
Yeah, definitely. And they also should not allow, when an incident like that occurs, for that police officer to resign with their pen and able to have their pension as well. But I heard she got arrested.
Oh yeah, she resigned and she was charged with manslaughter.
Right. So they should even, like, within the policing, they need to take away their funding.
So I mean, it's Russian culture. I mean,
as far as them being able to resign when an incident like that happens.
Oh, yeah.
You get your pension. No, you shouldn't even allow that.
Yeah, and administrative leave means to them that you're away and you're getting paid while you're away. And that's nonsense. That's BS. Yeah. They shouldn't be getting paid. All right. Yeah. I agree with you.
But that's these entities not wanting to go up against those unions.
Yeah, that's the problem.
But that I can't say yay or nay on that, because I don't understand it that much.
The same thing with the lawsuits. You know, these families that are suing, you know, for wrongful death. Whose pocket is that money coming out of?
Ours.
Exactly. It should come out of the police union.
Yeah.
Why should the taxpayers pay for their wrongdoings? That makes no sense.
I understand. I understand. But then, I mean, you're talking about what I think. What we're trying to get to is, you know, how do we address the issue? And a lot of things have been tried. You know, certain police departments. Okay, let me just say this. Certain department. Okay. I think I forgot the name. Or was it Cleveland or some police department was taken over by the federal government? All right, because the local police were so effed up. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. But it still continues. All right. Gosh. So how I'm gonna ask y'all guys, what do you think is a remedy to correct the situation? Now I heard laws and this that are not being enforced. That's not it. It's the people on the ground. All right, that are carrying out their duties.
But Michelle was on to something when it came down to the unions. Because those are the ones who put out information as it pertains to how you keep your job, what we're going to defend, how we're going to defend it, you know, and everything else. So they kind of set the tone when it comes down to, you know, the individuals performing their jobs. When you're involved with a union, there's a level of comfort and security that's built in there. It's like having it's job insurance. So if I go out there, like if you have a car, a nice car, you're not necessarily worried about getting into a car accident because I got into a car accident. I got insurance. Mm-hmm. It's going to be paid for. I'm taken care of. Right. So a loose parallel, but almost to the same, because a dangerous individual who is just as careless about what their actions are outside and does a particular act, they're not worried about it because they're covered. So I think what Michelle is saying, and there's something to it, and the way to being able to address that is through policies and laws that either get put a restriction on what unions are able to do. Now, that will be problematic. It's not going to be an easy thing to get done or pass,
right?
Or make them, you know, they can still protect whoever they want to protect, but now they're going to be culpable in the penalties assessed if there's litigation or whatever that happens. And so now make the state go after the union for their court costs and fees, as well as paying the fees to the families for the actions that happen. So then what's going to happen is the union will now sit there and put stricter guidelines on who's hired, how they're hired, and their actions and behaviors as it pertains to their work in that unit.
Yeah. I think that's a great way. Yeah, when you hit them in the pocket.
I understand where you're coming from. Mm-hmm. All right. But I'm talking about on a broad basis. I mean, you're talking New York unions, very strong. The NYPD union is strong. But what about the other police departments across the country? But what about in Minneapolis?
Well, I would think that
they'll follow suit.
If they see that, you know, blue covers blue, as far as I'm concerned.
That's the practice.
That their partner is a racist and you're not, and, you know, we're in the same union. Do you think that person that's not a racist is going to want to lose any money, lose out on any union benefits because his racist partner keeps shooting, killing somebody, choking somebody?
Well, that's the point that I'm when I mention purge, you know, whether it's union or not, a purge has to take place. I mean, across with all police, with the policemen across the country, because racism is permeating throughout the police department in the country, and even the FBI. You can throw them in. Anybody that's enforcing laws,
right?
Okay, that so if it's union, if that's got to be, they got to be purged. They should be purged.
They should be purged. I mean, Chris just mentioned the Fortune 500 companies are going to put an end to it all, because, you know, a lot of these companies are not happy with what is going on around this and in this country, period. I mean, we spoke about it the other day, Will Smith backed out of Georgia from doing a movie. You know, it starts there.
I think Chris
it starts
is definitely,
with small things like that.
Chris is definitely on to something. I think, you know, that's, you know, these Fortune 500 companies look at it like this. They're seeing it's starting to be bad business. This is just what Chris said. It's being, it's becoming bad business to be thought of in the same breath as racism, as somebody that adheres to racist practices. So they're looking, you know, I don't know whether it's from the heart or when they're looking at their bottom line, but they're starting to divest themselves from, you know, companies or, you know, states or whatever that are undertaking, you know, racist practices. And I think that's what you have to do to get any jurisdiction to really start to put pressure on them. You got to make them feel it in the pocket. And we have to discipline ourselves back in the day, like them, you know, was it Birmingham bus boycotters that walked for a year?
Montgomery.
And a half. Montgomery, that's right. That's Montgomery bus boycott, where these folks walked for a year and a half to prove their point, because they were being disrespected constantly. They're not going to, these companies, these peoples, these jurisdictions, these police departments, and unless it gets the attention of their pockets, they're going to ignore it. They've been ignoring it for a hundred years.
Exactly.
You know, more than that, but I'm just talking about recent history where, you know, these organized armed police departments feel like they got free reign to do whatever and nobody to answer to.
Right.
Well, they're going to answer to the bottom line if people ain't spending money in these jurisdictions.
There has to be.
You can't tell me we can't come up with a feasible strategy. There's some smart.
But how many times have we spoken about this though?
You're right.
But we don't coalesce. Right. We don't coalesce against a goal. An objective. Mm-hmm. We don't. Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. I don't get it. I mean, the thing is that I'm pushing for a purge. I mean, I think we all can get on board with a purge because, you know, that's not stopping anybody from going to the shop or, you know, or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, we can all get on board
Let me just give an example here. Why is it that the Me Too movement is more powerful than the racist country that we have? Why is it that you have powerful men going to jail, their companies are failing, they have to give up their positions because they grabbed somebody's booty or they made them have sex with them in order to have a TV show? Why is that more powerful than this?
Because like you said, these companies feel the economic impact of being on the wrong side of the Me Too movement. They don't respect the impact of being on the wrong side of any racist movement.
Yeah.
You know, they don't feel it in the pocket yet because we don't make them.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm quiet on it because I'm thinking about it. I'm trying to digest that. Mm-hmm. Only thing I can think is off the top is that you're looking at money. Me Too movement transcends race. So you're talking, you know, and they and women can, you know, they can come together on certain things.
Be powerful when it comes to that.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to speak with authority because I'm not a woman, but I'm just saying, you know, that's just logic to me. So, yeah.
No, I disagree with everyone's assessment of that. I truly believe that, you know, there are a lot of racist white women. Person that started the Me Too movement was a black woman, right? And she's been usurped by all of these white women. So, you know, it has nothing to do with, you know, equality and stuff like that. It's just racist white women fighting against their racist white husbands, and they want equality. That's all that's about. So that's why, you know, and I don't think it has much of an economic effect as opposed to it being an eyesore. You know, when you have 500,000 women wearing pink pussy caps, you know, converge on Constitution Avenue, you know, in Washington, D.C., and, you know, it gets coverage, you know, in like every gateway city in America, you know, you have, you know, anywhere from 100 to 500,000 women, you know, converge on, you know, whatever, you know, state capital. Yeah, it's going to draw attention. It's newsworthy, but it's more of an eyesore than it is an economic impact. Because when the George Floyd protests, you know, and things of that nature, and Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, when all that took place, Nike came out Nike came out and started backing us because they know black people by their Air Jordans, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, so I think that the killing of black men, you know, once we boycott, it still has more of an economic effect on these Fortune 500 companies as opposed to the Me Too movement. Once again, that has been usurped by white women because a black woman was sexually assaulted and she started the Me Too movement. And if you think I'm lying, what's her name again? Tell me her name. The lady that started the Me Too movement. That sister, what's her name?
No, the one
they don't even talk about her. They don't even talk about her. We don't even know her name. And she is the founder of the Me Too movement. We don't even know her name.
All right. Thank you, Gene. Thank you.
Well, Chris just made a statement that black culture is what moves the needle. And these corporations realize the internet allows people to eliminate them. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Great.
You can now move your product without these corporations. Technology evens the playing field.
Okay. Now we're talking.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Ernest. I think to Michelle's point, it's you know, as far as why it does better, the Me Too movement did better than Black Lives movement is one. I think there's a level of solidarity.
Right.
Most women and a lot of women who don't even agree with the Me Too movement or whatever, they're not as visceral about their disagreement about it.
Right.
And so, but there's a lot of, you know, prominent black, you know, influencers, I won't call them leaders, who will come out against Black Lives Matter or come out against, you know, trying to change or reform law enforcement and everything else, and will gravitate more towards quote unquote Blue Lives Matter versus Black Lives Matter. Right. And it is very, very, very hard to disagree with the purpose of the Me Too movement. And like to Walt's point, how could a man, you know, speak with any level of conviction about it? Even to disagree on principle, but to speak and articulate that in such a way. I think that's part of it. But Walt, you had something you was about to say?
Yes, I did. I wanted to try to move forward. If you were a young man, you know, let's say like you're age 17, 18, when you joined the Marines, and seeing that video of that military officer being, you know, abused the way he was, would that give you second thoughts about joining the military?
No. As a matter of fact, it would make me want to join. As a matter of fact, I was in the recruiter's office just the other day to actually become an officer in the National Guard. For me personally, when I was 17 or 16, when I was thinking about joining the military, what I felt at 16 is what kept me involved in a lot of political action movements, civil engagement, and everything, because I always felt like you had to be in it in order to win it. And what I mean by that is that you have to be involved in order to being able to make anything change or to take a stance or on a particular subject. You can't do it from the sidelines. And so when I saw that, I literally, I went down there yesterday. I'm filling out for my secret clearance right now and got a whole bunch of paperwork stuff I got to do. But
I always thought you were a spy anyway. I mean,
nah. But it was really to be a mentor and a guide for young young soldiers, young service members, as well as to be an example of what we can become. And I think that, and I would pray and hope that young man, you know, stays the course of his career and uses that and take and you know and transfers that energy and those feelings and emotions into a very positive and powerful way as he moves forward, because he's going to serve, and I mean has served and will serve as an inspiration for generations to come. And so that's how I felt.
All right. Okay, good. Good. All right, Greg, I haven't heard from you in a while.
Well, you know, when I saw it, I was upset. I mean, it hit home to me more than normal, just because, you know, if somebody in uniform and these two officers to me just showed absolutely no respect. They were so motivated by their fear and that rah-rah. Then the fact that this man, number one, is in uniform. Number two, he showed he was absolutely no threat to them, and they knew it. So mm-hmm. it was almost like them piling on. They felt a little more empowered because, you know, well, he's not a real threat anyway. He made me, you know, ride an extra mile, and you know, it was callous. And I can't help but think one of the things that I said, being that this guy is active duty soldier, and I guess, you know, there's a privilege to that. You can't tell me that his command, military command, didn't make a phone call to that police department to exert some pressure. Because white, black, brown, or whatever, he belongs to them. So that was a service member. You belong to Uncle Sam. And they mess with, there was an injustice done to somebody in uniform. They got to take care of that. They got to make sure that justice is done, at least to that soldier. They might not jump on it in its totality, but at least to that soldier, he's going to have the privilege of having a little extra push behind him, because there's no way. There's a terrible optics to that. There was terrible optics to that.
I know. I've never served in the military, but I would have to think that, you know, he would be treated at this term y'all guys use, no man left behind, that type of thing.
Absolutely.
It would impact the military in that sense. You agree with that?
They had to exert some pressure on somebody in Virginia hierarchy. The governor, the, you know, the lieutenant governor, they had to put some pressure on that hierarchy.
Oh no, they most certainly did. But I think to Walt's point, I mean, when I came up in the military, you know, again, at the age of 17, 18, there was a mutual respect between law enforcement and the military. You know, because we're both men and women serving. We're both men and women in uniform. We're both men and women who swore an oath to being able to give the ultimate price of our life for the duty in which we are serving in our respective areas. And so for that, I mean, to Greg's point, I went down and was signing back up and everything else. But yeah, it was very much disheartening. And to imagine the number of times I was in my uniform, I think Gene was talking about, you know, having a heavy foot early. I mean, we've all probably had a little heavy foot or whatever the case may be. But every interaction, I couldn't imagine me being in my uniform. The pride that we have the fact we had to earn this, right? This wasn't just something that was just given to us. Right. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, we swore an oath to being able to give the ultimate price for it.
Right.
Then to come and just ultimately just disrespect me, disregard me, just try to throw me around. Like, I mean, and for me, I'm 6'1", 250 solid, you know, mm-hmm. That's a little bit rough for me to sit there and to allow you, as soggy as that officer was, to sit there and let you throw me around. Because that's what ultimately I would have had to do, is let you throw me around. And that,
yeah, you would have to.
The most emasculating thing that you can possibly, yeah, the mess, maybe, but it's the most emasculating thing that an individual can do. So yeah, that, I mean, just all types of
of emotions that are going through. But to Greg's point, yeah, no, because you mess with one of us, this is one fraternity that's much bigger and stronger than Blue. They're not gonna get off light too light with this one.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Walter, yeah. I won't.
You know, yeah, Jay.
Walter, I gotta say this because many of the listening audience doesn't know. This is Gene Edwards speaking. Aside from my duties as a elected official, I'm also a court clerk for the Bronx DA, and I've sat in on many trials and I've watched many videos. And when they show the whole video, you think that, you know, the person in the video that committed, you know, that was a perpetrator, you think that they're wrong. But then once you segment the video and go back to what happened prior to the video, the story changes. Now, I'm playing devil's advocate here, brothers and sisters. He led them on a 1 to 2 mile chase. Well, not so much a chase, but a follow for 1 to 2 miles, because he wasn't speeding, right? And his excuse for doing that was so that he could be in a well-lit area, right? So now you got to the gas station. You're in a well-lit area with cameras and witnesses. Why didn't you comply? Why didn't you comply? That's the argument the police are going to make. He got what he wanted, a well-lit area with cameras and witnesses, and he still didn't comply. That's the argument now.
Comply with what, though, Gene? Comply with what?
Because he's get out the car.
For what? Because you have to have a legal reason for detainment. Because one, you've already stopped me. And so if you do stop a person, they have a legal obligation to being able to inform the individual of why they were actually stopped. So he was still well within his rights to being able to question those officers as to what he was doing,
right,
and why he was being stopped and why he was being asked to be removed from his vehicle.
When you are stopped, you ask for your driver's license and your insurance card. Why was he asked to come out of the car?
I'm going to tell you, he was also given two different commands.
Mm. Right. So the thing is, I mean, and granted, no, that, and it's a great question to push back, Gene. So, I mean, I'm not saying that you, I know why you did it. I posed the question. It was a great question. But the thing is that whenever we're doing that, it's because, you know, he has a right to being able to ask that. They still have an obligation to being able to do that. No officer has the right to being able to stop someone, detain someone unlawfully.
Right.
And even when we're in the military, when we're given orders, you're only to follow lawful orders. You can't do something that is unlawful and then try to use that as justification.
Right.
So, in a sense, he was within his rights to being able to question those officers, and their escalation was completely wrong. As it relates to the escalation of force continuum.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that was a great question, though. I like it.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, Ernest,
all right, guys, we're pushing up against the clock.
Ernest, you know,
what's up?
He got off. He actually got off easily. Because it could have went even worse than what we saw. Remember, Philando Castile got stopped on the side of the highway, broad day in the sunshine, with his family in the car. The officer asked him, "Do you have any guns in the car?" He says, "Yes, I have a registered firearm in the glove compartment." The cop still shot him. When they pulled over Nazario, and this doesn't get talked about enough, Nazario had his Glock on his side. Like, my dude, like, why aren't you security conscious? Not just about your surroundings, but for yourself. I carried a gun the whole time I was in the military. I get in my car, I throw my gun in the glove compartment, and that's that. He was trapped.
No.
He could have got shot, bro.
This, here's the thing, though, the point that you're bringing up is actually very good, because that is the concessions that as a black man that we have to do, and a black man who's in uniform who actually has that gun. Virginia is an open carry state, and I can almost bet part of my paycheck. I'm going to say the whole thing. But he probably has a concealed weapons permit as well. But however, because it was on his leg, it is still open carry. So he is still within his legal rights of being able to do so. You're suggesting because you're in a black, you're a black man in this particular climate, but this climate has been going on since Jim Crow and even before then or whatever. So you're sitting there saying that at no point in time as a black man could we actually be as free to being able to carry a weapon without the penalty or consequence of being of our lives being taken because we are doing what we are what the rights are of everyone else in the state. Because the state, again, Virginia is an open carry state, so he's well within his legal rights of being able to do so.
Right. So he's supposed to say, I'm good. You know, I'm just happy I didn't get killed. No.
Right.
He's violated. We ain't supposed to draw the line.
No. What I'm saying is that in 2021, black men and black people in general are still delusional, thinking that we have the same rights. We don't. As long as we're 3/5 in the Constitution, we don't have the same rights. And I actually went through that before. It was 1992. I was stationed in Norfolk, Virginia, and my mother and my cousin came down to visit that night. And, you know, we went to 7-Eleven to get some Slurpees. They were in the house. It was my wife and I. And it was kind of late at night. So, you know, guys coming from the club after hour spots, I mean, after work spots, stuff like that. And black guy disrespected my wife, like, you know, disrespected her in a sexual manner. And I was strapped and, you know, it was exposed. You could see it on my hip. And there was a white girl behind the counter in the 7-Eleven. So, you know, the guy tried to hit on her. She said, you know, I'm married. You know, my husband's right there. And he basically said, you know, F your husband. I'm trying to get with you. I walk up to him and I walk up to him and I punched him in his face. And then he fell through the doors. And, you know, I got on top of him and I was, you know, giving him the pity pass upside the head. White girl called police and said, you know, two black guys are fighting and one of them has a gun. I thought it was Midnight Express. Remember that movie Midnight Express when he got busted at the airport?
Yeah.
When they was just surrounding him and everybody had the white light flashing? It was crazy. It was four Norfolk police cars and two Virginia State Troopers. And they had their gun drawers. They was about to light my ass up in that parking lot.
Damn.
And it was a registered firearm. I never unsheathed, never did nothing. Never did nothing. And I was active duty.
A black man carrying a gun.
Right.
It was an aggravated situation where you were currently engaged. You're right. Your weapon had nothing necessarily to do with the actions that were being taken. It was the response to the call that was made. In this particular situation with Navarro, his gun had nothing to do with the situation because it wasn't called. It was not reported. That wasn't even seen nor discovered until he was actually completely removed from the vehicle. Those officers had their guns drawn already with no conception whether or not that man was strapped or not. So, that, I mean, those are, I understand kind of the situations and what could have happened in a negative way either to you, God bless it, that didn't, or to Navarro, and God bless it, that did not happen to him either. But those are two separate situations in the discovery of the weapon and how prominent it is into the actual situation.
Okay, so let me just interject, guys, is that we're pushing up against the clock. And I do want to hope, I do hope, that the audience was able to gain some knowledge from what we discussed. I'm quite sure you did. I thank you for joining the Walt Weekly. You know, we're here every Friday. And you know, we got some very smart and talented people on the panel. And I would like to ask you, if this is your first time joining us, to follow us, share us, and like us. And also to visit our website. So that way you can get a good look at the background of these talented people. They're on www.thewaltweekly.com. And you can take a look at their bios and get some feel of who these talented people are. Okay? With that said, We will be doing a rebroadcast of this live show on Sunday. It will be released around 3 p.m. All right. And you can catch us on all of the major streaming platforms, audio platforms, such as Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. We're going to do a rebroadcast and you'll be able to tell your friends and if they and have them listen, or you can re-listen to it if you join late. Okay. All right. So with that said, I'm going to turn it over to Michelle and she's going to walk us out. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Walter. And I think this topic will definitely be revisited in the near future, right, guys?
It was awesome. I think so, yeah.
Yeah, great topic. Of course and it everyone will. Did well. Yeah, we'll definitely revisit this. But thank you, Walter. Thank you to our sponsors, Beauty Blends by Ami, Soap and Love, and Michelle Sweeney here, and our weekly panel. We appreciate you guys coming on every week. You can find us at thewaltweekly.com, IG and Facebook, The Walt Weekly, Twitter, Walt Weekly. Podbean, The Walt Weekly, iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Pandora, and other streaming platforms. We appreciate all of our guests in the chat room. Thank you all. Have an amazing weekend. Be safe.
All right. Thank you. Have a very nice weekend. Take care.
Peace.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Have a good one, y'all.